Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I said yesterday, looking forward to moving these infrastructure bills forward for a bunch of reasons. Transportation, moving to electric vehicles, remaking our economy, leaving something for our children in the future. So many opportunities to do good things. Maybe a little renewable energy, maybe move us in that direction. Because after all, the UN did say that recent report, it's code red for humanity. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there are 107 wildfires going on in this country right now. Texas, California, Montana are literally burning, which is why we need to do something. We need to do it now. And here to share some thoughts on the infrastructure bills, I've asked Austin Keyser to come talk with us. Austin is the assistant to the National President of Government Affairs at the National Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW. Austin, thanks for taking time for us.
I appreciate it, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into all the wires and all the transportation stuff and all the infrastructure stuff, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the passing of Rich Trumka today. His service was today. I know you worked for him. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, Rich Trumka was a great leader at Titan. I grew up in coal country myself, and I grew up as a kid watching him on television, you know, locking arms, wearing camouflage, being militant, out fighting for workers' rights. It gave me a lot of passion for the labor movement as a small child. You know, you got three channels growing up out there, and he was he seemed to be on the news every night out there fighting for workers. So always been a hero of mine. And, you know, as you just mentioned, I got the opportunity to work for him. I was Central Labor Council leader in Southern Ohio, and he tapped me to come in and be the state director for the National AFL-CIO in Ohio, then the Midwest region director. And it was during the fights right after the Tea Party, you know, sort of took over the Midwest, and just so many hours. I can't even count how many hours we spent in cars riding around the Midwest, going from fight to fight, from Wisconsin to Indiana, Ohio, Senate Bill 5. Just a great trooper and somebody I've stayed close to even since I came back to the IBEW. Just a great mentor, and he loved to see young people coming up in the labor movement. He loved to coach us along, and just gave me and a lot of other people a lot of great opportunities and a lot of education. So somebody will always be dear to my heart, and somebody I'll do my best to carry on his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, from this point forward now, it's we're going to have to pick up that vision and move forward. And we're in this most interesting time. Because I would argue Joe Biden's probably the most pro-labor president, at least of my lifetime. And there's something of an opportunity to get some stuff done, maybe in this this big infrastructure bill, but you know, hopefully down the road as well. So now's the time where labor's got to come back together and unite and pick up Rich's mantle and move on.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We, the something he was very passionate about was energy. Obviously, he came out of the coal miners. So, but he was like us. He realized that things are changing. That climate change is real. You know, the real things went out there. Our members are the first ones to go into storms. We're on the tip of watching climate change. These super storms, these major events, they cause power outages and major devastation. And our power linemen are the first to go in before most other first responders to make sure the area is safe and electrified. Hospitals have their electricity back, and so. It's definitely not something we're hiding from. It's been difficult, you know, to look at how you transition, and that's been a tough bridge for us. We don't want to leave workers behind in the process, and I think we've made a lot of progress. And in this bill, we certainly made a lot of progress because President Biden is such a pro-union president.
I mean, the fact that he got this through, and I've been saying for a while, we've been talking about infrastructure for a very long time in this country, and I've been pointing out the fact that the I-35 bridge collapse was 14 years ago this month, and we were talking about it for probably several years before that, how we needed a big investment in our future. So as someone in the building trades, you've got to be looking at both plans, especially the hard infrastructure plan, as an opportunity to get people back to work, to create good family-sustaining jobs, and to rebuild the future of this country.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much in this infrastructure package, and you know, I want to hedge it with this. I mean, it's not sort of a perfect sort of, you know, what we would have exactly written, but we have to negotiate with Republicans here, and that's a tough thing to do. And I got to say that the end product is impressive. I was quite honestly surprised at how far the White House and the Senate Democrats were able to get us with Republicans on this. I mean, we're talking $73 billion for power infrastructure. There's tons of funding in here for for renewables, for electric vehicles, for carbon capture, for keeping nuclear power plants online, which is so important to the baseload power. We can't decarbonize without that. That same report you just mentioned, says that very directly. It's got to be a key component. And we represent workers at, I think, 89 of the 93 reactors in this country. So, a big issue for us, a big issue for our members. So, look, there's weatherization assistance in here. There's public transit. There's airports. You've seen the bill. There's just so much in here that's good. And we're talking record-breaking investment levels. But, it left a little on the table. And we're gonna try to figure that out later. For instance, we didn't get prevailing wages on the broadband infrastructure. That's a giant investment, and it's $42 billion, and that's substantial. But what we do know is there are going to be processes, there's going to be ways out money's allocated, there's going to be administrative functions here, rulemaking that the administration is going to be very friendly on. So I think we're going to be able to clean a lot of that up through the administration and through the White House as it's deployed.
No, on the broadband front, it's one of those things that I'm fairly upset about, because we're basically handing corporate America a boatload of money and saying, here, go ahead, here's a gift, is where they should have been making these investments. I'm a believer, and we should be reclaiming our electrical lines, our utilities, our broadband. We should have communities who are able to do this, and we own and control our own destiny on that front.
Yeah, so you had the Tennessee Valley Authority, as an example here. And quite honestly, they've built more fiber optic middle mile broadband than anybody else in the country currently. So it's a dual functionality. So broadband, we hear a lot of it talked about in the context of schools and education and the digital divide. And those things are all very important. Again, kid coming up in Appalachia, I see what, my home community is pretty underserved. But the beauty of it is that these utilities need broadband too. They need fiber optics between their substations. They need it into the meters of homes. If we're going to have a smart grid, it has to be networked, and it has to have a communication system attached to it. So there's so many opportunities here of dual purpose that, I think building this thing through utilities is going to make sure it's union. So it's going to take a lot, it's going to, and rural co-ops are playing a big part. Middle Tennessee Electric, for instance, in Tennessee, is probably the biggest builder and service provider now in the entire region, and maybe in the country, for a rural co-op, and they're doing this work union. And it's a great example. So there's new business models that are going to pop up here. We're going to play a little bit of whack-a-mole here, making sure the bad guys don't prevail on us. But I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I think having the White House, friends in the White House, it's going to help a lot.
So the other question I have is, there's so much to do. I remember Jerry Brown ran for president in 92 on the platform of he was going to restring all of the wires in the entire country that go into people's homes, because there's some astronomical amount of loss just in transmission for electricity. We've been talking about doing this for ages. Now there's almost an opportunity to do some of it. The question is, do we have enough people who are able to do it? I'm trying to find somebody to just wire a couple of outlets. I don't know how you're going to rewire half the country. And do the kind of work that we're talking about going forward with solar and electric vehicles. There are going to be wires coming out of our ears. Do we have enough people to play with those wires?
Well, of course, it takes a while to train a journey level electrician, and power linemen are about a 4-year training program. And we've been screaming this for years. We need, just like any other business or any other industry, anything else, we need market predictability if we're going to invest. We do our workforce training. It's completely industry funded. We don't ask for federal dollars or handouts here. We're not a startup. We've been around since the advent of electricity training electricians. And our programs are plenty, they're like a bladder. We can take in as many workers as we need. They're built, the structure is built to take in workers. But you're exactly right. Recruitment is hard. And so we're excited about a lot of new initiatives that we're working on. One of them is working with the military. We've been partnering with the White House with the, something Rich was a big champion of, which is, the Veterans Council, Will Attic. I don't know if you know Will Attic.
Sure. But, good friend of the show.
He's doing great. Yeah, he's doing great work. We've been partnering up and having a lot of conversations on how we get more folks coming from the military, because one, they're ready to go to work, right? They love the community of being in a union after they get out of the military. It's a natural fit for them. And it does away with a lot of social ills that come with that transition. For them. So great opportunities. And it's the most diverse workforce in the country. So it's an automatic sort of plus up for us in that department too, which we've made huge strides on. But it's going to be, it's hard. The people, a lot of high schools and universities have not been friendly to blue collar jobs. They've coached people away from them. And we're starting to get some momentum back. And these power linemen are making six figures.
No, I know. I know. Just to get somebody to come wire an outlet, it ain't cheap.
We're going to need 100,000 more of them, we think, over the next few years. But huge opportunities on the grid, too, in the manufacturing space with the Buy America provisions that are in this bill. We're talking something IBEW does and other unions do is manufacture wire and transformers and all of these components that are going to go into the grid. It's not just wires, and it's not just sort of the installation.
No, I mean, the jobs that will come from the reverberation effect of just doing some of this stuff is mind-blowing. And it's one of those things where I can't believe that administrations of the past, the former administration, on day one when he took over, I'm saying you should pass a massive infrastructure bill because everybody's for it. And we're now finding out everybody's kind of for it. The polling is in a time when we're so divided on virtually every issue, this one seems to be, not so divided.
Yeah. Well, I wonder about the last administration's strategy there, because they had a huge opportunity to build a very as populist as he tried to be. It was insane to me that he didn't do infrastructure, because Democrats were sitting there ready to do infrastructure. It would have been a tough negotiation for them, too. But it was a tough negotiation, just like it was for Biden. But we were able to get it done and able to get big things done here. So, yeah, it's insane to me that that they didn't get anything done there, but a bunch of rhetoric and a bunch of talk and a bunch of banter, but no delivery. So here we are. We're sitting here with on the verge of, anyways. We're one step of like a quarter of the way there, getting this to the president's desk.
Yeah.
If we're going to measure it, but I think we're well on our way. I think we're well on our way.
As someone who focuses on this like you do, obviously you're the assistant to the international president for government affairs there at the IBEW. What do you see? If you're the odds broker on this, if you're the odds maker, what do you think the odds of getting one of them or both of them through? Where would you be laying money down?
If I was going to lay money down, I'd say we're going to get both of them done. And I think we're going to get both of them done later this fall. And it's going to be, I would give it a 90% chance here. I think this was the biggest hurdle of the process, was getting, the split Senate, to get those 10 Republican senators on board. From here on out, we just need simple majorities. And, the House, of course, is they're posturing, and rightfully so. They want good democratic principles and priorities incorporated into the reconciliation package, into the budget package. And, Republicans knew that, and still 19 of them voted for this bill. They knew that right behind this was going to come a purely democratic bill that was going to have some democratic principles in it. Now, you've got Manchin, you've got Sinema, you've got some moderates there, I think, that made some promises that, they won't revisit in reconciliation things that they negotiated on, the things that we see enumerated in the infrastructure package. But I still think we're going to get some really, really big, really bold things. I'm hoping we can get it on that Build Back Better. It leaves a legacy that's something like the New Deal. I think it's going to be a little smaller than that, right? But and it's an opportunity to reshape some key components of the country, especially electricity.
Electrification. The reality, Austin, this is an opportunity to reshape the next 100 years of this country. We have the ability to, reshape travel and transit. There's talk of extending transit lines so that I can get on a train somewhere and get somewhere else where maybe I don't have to have my car. Or maybe if I get an electrical vehicle, maybe I can have a recharging station. Maybe we set up the network that we need. Maybe we transform gas stations into electric charging stations. Maybe we have the ability to do this. To me, this is really exciting stuff because this is all the kind of stuff I was reading about as a kid in sci-fi magazines and books, that we're going to be able to maybe get to those places.
Yeah, no, it's you heard President Biden talk, at the State of the Union address, talking about the IBEW is going to install these 500,000 stations, right? And he's lived up to that. We've had so many meetings with the automakers, with President Stevenson in the White House, talking about how we do this. Not just build it, not just give away money to corporations, but to build this with union workers. And so, that focus is just so obvious. And so it just sort of underpins everything that we're trying to accomplish here. And the progressives in the House, they want the same thing, right? They want really strong labor provisions in here, not just progressives. There's a lot of people who do, including one or two Republicans, honestly, in the House that are strong on labor standards, supported the PRO Act, for instance. So, look, we're going to get as much of the PRO Act as we can. I think in reconciliation, the Byrd rule, which, I think is an antiquated rule that, probably ought to be thrown in the garbage, but it is what it is. If they live by the Byrd rule, it's going to be, we can't get everything in the PRO Act in there, But there are a lot of things that create penalties and provisions and enforcement of laws that are very, very much in bounds there. And that gives us the opportunity to grow unit density as we grow the size of the market. We grow density with it, not just.
There'll be some economic things that get in there. But, you know, for a company like Amazon, that doesn't really matter. The last minute here I want to spend, you know, basically is a recruiting opportunity because, you know, you guys are going to need a lot of people to string up wires. And I say all the time, our apprenticeship programs, all the building trades apprenticeship programs are fantastic. They're pathways to good, solid middle class wage jobs. And more importantly, it's an earn as you learn thing. You're not going to be saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt and all of that. You know, make the pitch of how this is going to play out for the next generation of workers coming out of schools now.
Yeah, look, I'm a journeyman electrician by trade, right? I went through the apprenticeship and came through the rank and file, so I believe it. I bleed it here. But you know, look, there's no better opportunity. I mean, you see kids going to college, getting degrees, you know, because corporate America is telling them they need a bachelor's degree to rent cars at down at the local rental, you know, car rental company. It's absurd, right? They're putting so much of a burden, a financial burden on workers to put them to work. This is a way to shift back the economy to the point where employers have to invest in their workers, right? And we've been doing that in the trades for years. I mean, outside the United States military, the largest vocational trainer, us and the other trades combined in the entire world. So huge opportunities. We're talking sophisticated training. We're talking career paths with pensions and healthcare, things you don't find in a lot of other sectors of the economy. These are just excellent jobs with opportunities to move up. The volume of workers we need, you know, we're going to need tons of foremen and project estimators and folks. So the pathway's there. I mean, even if you only want to roll up your sleeves and do the hard, you know, in the ditch work or up on the pole work for a few years, there's going to be so many places to land here. The market's getting bigger and the opportunities are there. And I'd strongly recommend to anybody, and I would strongly recommend parents coach their kids there because it's a great way to save their pocketbook too.
I've been trying.
Yeah, look, our doors are open. And we're ready. I mean, we need folks across the board, not just in the electrical trade, but across the building trades.
Austin, I appreciate the time. Good stuff. I'd love to have you back and talk about some of those opportunities. I know you guys are on the cutting edge of green technology, of the new electric revolution. I'd love to have you come back and share some of the work that you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Love to take a deep dive on any of that with you anytime.
Good stuff, Austin. Appreciate the time. Austin Keyser, international assistant to the international president of government affairs there at the IBEW. Check out their website, ibew.org. We'll get links out at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.